From the studios of Books in Motion, this is Gene Edgany, reading A Forever Death by Michael W. Shira. And we'll begin with Chapter 1. Puppy didn't really call at the best of times, but his call didn't come at the most inopportune time either. A social gathering is a group of friends getting together after work for a couple of beers, or longtime acquaintances milling around the hors d'oeuvres table in the bar at Brandt's annual Christmas fete, or even four of us sitting around a bridge table on a weekday night munching cheese and crackers and trading news. But a social affair sparkles with diamonds and emeralds, glistens with Dior silks, smells of exotic perfumes, colognes, and previously uncirculated spicy rumors, tinkles with laughter and titters with chatter, shifts and swirls in eddies like the blue-gray smoke of fine cigars, slides over the palate with a double-edged bite of good cognac, leaving one just a bit breathless and giddy. It is an event to which a seemingly exclusive set of conspicuous consumers is invited, those with townhouses in Aspen and Acapulco, and two or three Mercedes are the most likely candidates. But as the old saying goes, we all know how to live rich. It's simply that the rich have had more practice. I'd been invited to this particular affair, to provide local color, I'm sure. Some of that ilk recognized my name from my byline, Emerson W. Ward, on magazine articles, and even fewer said they'd actually read the one novel I'd published. But generally, when it's discovered that I'm neither famous nor rich, it's assumed that either a horrible mistake has been made, or that I must be Myrna's new friend. As it so happened, I had come with Myrna, but we were old friends, not new friends. Myrna Goodwin was a charming and vivacious 60-something lady who wore the years even better than the collection of clingy designer gowns she owned for occasions such as this. With a couple of nips and tucks, a chemical peel, and a lot of hard work with a personal trainer in the privacy of her own weight room in her 24th-floor Lakeshore Drive co-op, she packed all that vibrant energy into a petite 5'2" body that exuded the looks and sensuality of a woman 20 years younger. She had gobs of money by virtue of the fact that she had outlived all three of her husbands, all of whom had been very wealthy men. She had made the mistake of latching onto the 20-year-old son of her friend, the senator, one summer for a brief dalliance. The boy got greedy, or stupid, and stole a large portion of her jewel collection. Lord knows how he thought he was going to unload the stuff. But dear Myrna was caught between a rock and a hard place. Not wanting to call the police, she had asked Brant Williams for advice, and he had recommended me. I had shaken the boy up some, scaring the wee out of him, and had returned the lady her jewels intact. We had since been good friends, although on occasion Myrna had hinted broadly at other favors I could do for her. If I put my mind to it, I can play the game as well as anyone, but just then I was hard-pressed, stifling yawns. The "my fortune is bigger than your fortune" competition was not holding my attention, and I could think of only three reasons why I was still where I was, out of deference to my host, who was a good friend, because the charity for which the affair was raising money was a good cause, and because a woman who looked like she didn't belong had attracted my attention. I'd caught glimpses of her throughout the evening, and each time had felt a strange stirring inside, more akin to curiosity than desire.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?